From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, October 27th, 2017. And on this day, we'll look at the University of Maine's effort to fill the state's future workforce needs, and lawyers for a woman who sued a Camden company for racial housing discrimination and won are taking the landlord to court to collect damages. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Assistant Senate Republican leader Andre Cushing of Newport has resigned his leadership post. He says he wants to devote more time to his family. Republican sources say there is a need to have someone in the role that will help the GOP keep control of the Senate, and that Cushing can't commit to the time needed to serve as both a senator and direct his campaign efforts. Cushing has filed to run for re-election to the Senate. Republican senators could elect a new assistant leader next month when they return to the State House to handle vetoes from the special session. Senate President Mike Thibodeau has praised Cushing's service in leadership. In the first 3 months of Maine's budget year, revenues have been significantly higher than expected.
July through September revenues doing quite well. Revenues are over budget by almost $34 million.
David Gunter of Maine Revenue Services told the state's Economic Forecasting Commission today that income and sales taxes account for the greatest shares of that extra $34 million in revenue. Gunter says money coming in from tax withholding revenues increased almost 3% in contrast to the small decline that was expected. Both individual and corporate income taxes were above projections. He also said job growth is growing and some areas are seeing a labor shortage. A woman who successfully sued a Camden Realty Corporation for racial housing discrimination says she hasn't seen a penny in court-awarded damages yet. The woman's nonprofit legal team is taking the relatively unusual step of forcible collection. The defendants deny any wrongdoing. They say the legal action has created a burden that is ruining their lives. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
The case stems from an incident in the fall of 2014, where Shirley Kelderhouse applied for a Section 8 apartment from McGuntacook Management and Realty Corporation in Camden. Kelderhouse, who is white, has two children with her African-American partner, Sean Patton. She says the landlord, Jeffrey Weymouth, was helpful and eager to rent the apartment when they spoke on the phone, but she says Weymouth's demeanor shifted when she and her biracial children showed up a few days later.
When we arrived at the viewing of the apartment, just the look of, like, I can't believe it. It was unsettling, but we went through the process and we went through the apartment, and he was kind of like unsure, and I didn't understand why the sudden change.
But then she says Weymouth asked her 13-year-old daughter if her father was planning on moving in with them. The daughter said yes. Some days later, according to Kelderhouse, Weymouth told the family it would not be possible to have the apartment ready in the time allotted, allegedly telling Kelderhouse he couldn't do anything further to help them.
My daughter felt responsible and blamed herself for not getting the place.
That, says Kelderhouse, threw her daughter into self-doubt and depression. And that, she says, is the main reason she decided to file a complaint with the Maine Human Rights Commission, which found that Kelderhouse and Patton had a case. When Jeffrey Weymouth and his wife, Rosemary, declined to settle, nonprofit Pine Tree Legal Assistance and the Maine Human Rights Commission sued and won. Now, the time for appeals has run out.
We know in our heart of hearts that we are not racist. We did not discriminate against them, but we couldn't afford to move forward.
Rosemary Weymouth says it wasn't racism, but a perfect storm of two types of government paperwork, staff problems, and health issues that slowed down the process to where they couldn't get the Kelderhouse Patton family into the apartment by the time they needed to move. Now she says she and her husband, both in their 70s, may never be able to pay the $40,000 in damages, with about $8 in interest accruing every day, along with $140,000 to their own lawyers, plus a yet-to-be-tabulated bill from Pine Tree Legal. Weymouth says the state is making an example of them and ruining their lives in the process.
If we look back at it, and we felt that we were being held hostage at the Maine Human Rights Commission, that if we had written a check for $15,000, we would have been better off. But we felt truly that we couldn't have that mark on our record, that we didn't do it.
I have not been involved in a case that's required enforcement like this before.
Patricia Ender, staff attorney at Pine Tree Legal Assistance, says nobody on her team wanted to make an example of the Weymouths. But she says the Kelderhouse Patton family are owed court-awarded damages, and Pine Tree has now hired outside counsel to navigate the process of collections. The takeaway message, she says, is that landlords should do their homework and understand the law.
They should be aware of the effects on individuals who experience discrimination, and they should take precautions, many precautions, to avoid discriminating in the first place. And then if they do have a charge filed against them, to take it very seriously and to try to resolve it and address it as soon as possible.
Shirley Kelderhouse says people should know that racism does happen in Maine. She says the family would like to move out of the state but can't until the settlement money comes in. Meanwhile, the Weymouths maintain that they continue to rent to many tenants of all races and have never been accused of racism before. Pine Tree Legal Assistance is expected to file its bill for legal services early next month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For years, businesses in Maine have feared the coming of the silver tsunami when thousands of baby boomers are projected to leave the workforce. It's expected to take place over the next few decades. One strategy the state is using to minimize the impact on future labor supplies begins in college. The plan's designed to keep more students in Maine after graduation and move them into those unfilled jobs. Robbie Feinberg has our story.
You have five grams.
Philip Parent smiles as he tinkers with tiny metal weights and force tables in an introductory physics class. The college freshman at the University of Maine at Machias says he always loved this stuff, ever since his dad took him to his workplace, a giant airplane hangar.
And so my brother and I would go see the hangars and see the helicopters, you know, sit in the little cockpits in there. And it was life-changing because, like, if you want to be aspire to be an engineer and you see all these functions, you're like, oh, what does this do?
Yet parents' dream of studying engineering in college nearly fell apart earlier this spring. He had set his sights on the University of Maine at Orono. But by the time his application went through, he says all the spots in the school's engineering program had filled up. Parent wasn't sure what to do next.
My teachers in high school and my friends asking, so where are you going to college? What are you going to do? You know, are you taking a gap year?
About a month later, though, a university counselor called Parent to offer him a new option. He could go to UMaine in Machias instead, then transfer back to Orono a few semesters later, with enough credits to eventually get that engineering degree.
And so far, I really like it here. Classes they geared up for me are nice prereqs and, you know, standard classes going into Orono.
UMaine officials say they hope that this kind of collaborative effort among the state's seven public universities will help keep more students like Parent in Maine. But they've got a large challenge ahead of them. That's because across New England, baby boomers are beginning to age out of the workforce. And there are relatively few young workers to take their place. State labor economist Glenn Mills says to break even, Maine will need to fill in a gap of up to 7,000 workers each year.
We can only offset that if we are able to entice a lot of people to move into the state, younger people.
The other challenge, analysts say, will be to make sure those skilled workers are spread out and not just in and around Portland. That's where the collaboration comes in. In an effort to address the issue, the UMaine system launched what it called the One University Initiative a few years ago. The idea is to place all of the state's universities' campuses together as one financial structure. Part of the reason was to help turn around a budget that was in the red. But UMaine System Chancellor James Page says he also hopes it will remove geographic barriers and encourage collaboration with Maine businesses. Page wants more students, from Farmington all the way to Machias, to train for jobs in targeted high-demand industries, such as computer science or nursing.
And so One University is a response to that challenge. How do we get somebody who may be in Portland to contribute significantly to an economic development opportunity in Aroostook County.
The system reported a 2% jump in enrollment last fall, but almost all of that undergrad growth is still coming from out of state. And experts say that recruiting new undergrads is only one step to get more workers into Maine. John Doerr, a consultant and strategist for the Maine Community College System, says the state must also find ways to get more adults into training and into college.
These are folks who need lots of help with bringing their basic skill levels up, bringing their employability skill levels along, and their technical skills to fit what the labor market is looking for.
The university says it's aware of the challenge and is investing in alternative pathways too, such as online degrees and student outreach centers in Rumford, Millinocket, and other rural communities. And some officials say they're encouraged by the progress they've witnessed. William Otto, a science department chair at the University of Maine at Machias, says he's already seen it make a difference for engineering students who may otherwise have left the state.
You know, if they're not graduating from Maine, they're probably going to be looking for engineering jobs elsewhere. My biggest hope is we're going to be able to serve students in our region better, and we're going to be able to help keep more of those students in Maine when they graduate.
It's something that businesses are hoping for, too, to make sure they'll have enough workers in 10 or 20 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, October 27th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a great weekend.